but it would be a great way to trick me. So I'm going to say, I'm probably overthinking it, that the tall tale is Moondogs.
No. Sorry.
Huh. So which
you
is
did,
it?
The band that I was in, we performed both at Moondogs and we performed for a Republican fundraiser at the Balcony.
What was the band?
The Rhythm Ducks.
Oh, I remember that band. I didn't know you were part of that band.
Yeah, I was one of the singers.
Now, what made you pick an astronaut as your tall tale?
Well, because I saw him at WQED. He spoke after the Apollo 11 mission, and but we were I was just in the audience. I never actually got to go up and shake his hand.
No handshake from him.
No handshake.
So now I'm 2-2. So you brought me back up or back down, I should say, to a 500.
Tied.
500 record. Thank you, Jim.
Those
were great ones. And I'm going to quickly do Patrick in Stanton Heights. I worked in a program that searched for planets around other stars. I have operated a real locomotive. I worked with Mr. Rogers. Those are tough. I'm going to go with I have operated a real locomotive as the tall tale, because I could see you're working with Mr. Rogers locally, and from past interactions, I know how much you like astronomy. I can see you operating a real locomotive, but I had to pick one as the tall tale. So Patrick has just texted the answer. The third is not true. He worked with Mr. McFeely. So as it's not surprising, I end up 2-3 with two truths and a tall tale. But we know a lot more about each other. You can play this game with some other people. You know, it's a lot of fun. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP-FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ-FM Grove City, WCUC-FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, WKYW-LP Kaiser, West Virginia Mountain Streams Radio.org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, and SLBRadio.org/radio.
Don't wanna make a hit record. Imagine Mercedes, cellular phones, 20 room house, but we're never at home. Money rolls in, we spend every dime, but we never get to spend any quality time. Big said life keeps us rushing around. We gotta small up and simple down. It's early morning meeting and late night meals. Open that briefcase and close that deal. Gridlock in the daily grind. Got a piece of the rock, but no peace of mind. Just find a little one horse town. Small. traffic lights. Give me the crickets and the starry nights. Trade in the suits and the French cuisine for some cowboy boots, biscuits and beans. Sell the poop and get a blue tech hound on a small up and simple down. Honey, don't you love the way it sounds? Time to small up and simple down.
Tim O'Brien here at the Saturday Light Brigade. I really want to invite you to keep listening. Our Youth Express segments happen in this 10 o'clock Eastern hour. And today's is really interesting. In about half an hour, we are going to be talking with members of the University of Pittsburgh Gene Team. These are students who are working with researchers and getting involved with biomedical engineering projects and learning more about these subjects. And right now, we are going to talk with Ayana Singh. And Ayana has just done some remarkable things. She is going into 10th grade at North Allegheny, and her work has been honored by the Pittsburgh Regional Science and Engineering Fair. She's also received some other honors that we'll talk about, but I'd like you to get to know her first as a person, and then we'll talk a bit about her work. Good morning, Ayana. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. First of all, before I forget, is there anybody you might like to acknowledge or that's encouraged you with this work along the way?
Yeah, my parents are already here, so they're already supporting me on, and just the rest of my family, my sister at home, my grandma, my grandparents.
That's great. Before talking about your project, what other kinds of things do you like to do? Do you have favorite subjects, sports, anything like that?
My favorite subject is science, and I like to read books. I also participate in debate, research, and my first priority, of course, is to bother my little sister.
How old is your sister?
She's 6 years old.
What's her name?
Amira.
It's nice to hear that. What would you do to bother her, do you think? I used to have ways as the youngest brother of three brothers. I loved bothering my older brothers.
We can act like Tom and Jerry sometimes.
So, when did you discover you had a love of science?
Yeah, so I had been doing science fair since 7th grade. But then last year, I was inspired to research autism from my younger cousin who lives in India. She's 6 years old, the same age as my sister. And I always see my aunt and uncle struggle a little bit to find the best pathways to support her, provide the right treatments and therapy. So I wanted to help with that.
So she was diagnosed with autism?
Yeah, she is diagnosed.
And you mentioned that they struggled. People struggle everywhere,
yeah.
Right? Autism is... there are lots of cases where it's hard to find what works best.
Right.
But autism is particularly hard, I think, because it can be present in so many different forms. It can be difficult to diagnose. And what works, I don't know if this is true, but I imagine it's a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, for sure. It's mainly like social behavior and teaching them communication, especially my younger cousin who is mostly nonverbal, so it's things like that for her.
So here you are wanting to apply principles of science, hypotheses, testing, proofs, How did you approach your science project?
Yeah, so what I ended up doing is currently one of the things like we discussed is identifying the right treatments and therapies. So part of that, part of the way that they are diagnosed and diagnose the severity of what they have and et cetera, is the ADOS, or the Autism Diagnostic Observation Schedule. This relies on behavior observation and interviewing them, et cetera. So the problem with these type of tools is there's no neurobiological biomarker. So I wanted to approach that. And what I did is I researched.
No, you're yeah. You're doing great. What is a biomarker? Tell me what would you, if there could be one, what would it do?
Oh, yeah. So what I ended up doing is I found fMRI scans. So those are like a type of MRI scan which analyze blood flow in particular. And I used that from a public database which had fMRI scans from people on the spectrum. So that gave me a deeper perspective into what's actually going on, which parts of their brain interact when they're like talking and things like that.
So when you had used the term neurological biomarker, mm-hmm. did I get that right?
Yeah.
And so that would be more or less a standard or some kind of objective way of sort of giving you a yes-no answer or getting you closer to a
yeah.
yes-no answer, and non-existed, but you discovered by looking at these existing scans that there might be a way to use that existing
yeah.
data to come up with that. That's amazing. And
Thank you.
Forgive me for interrupting. I just want to be sure we understand. So you took these scans, mm-hmm. and what did you discover?
Yeah, so I trained a decision tree-based model called the random forest classifier. So I trained it, I tested it with these scans, and there were also other variables like their social communication scores. So with that, I made it try to predict autism severity, like the severity of autism in
yeah.
individual. And it was able to do so with 88% accuracy, so it was pretty good. And now what it can be used to, you can input an fMRI scan from any individual, and then it can guess its best to predict the severity, and then you can use that to find the best treatment, therapy. It's just a deeper perspective into the brain, basically.
That is simply amazing. Was it able to help your cousin?
It's right now, it definitely needs to be further developed. People also need to get the fMRI scan, so there are things like that. But people at Pitt, researchers at Pitt are also looking into it and across the world trying to find something like this. So.
Part of me wonders why this has never been pursued before. Mm-hmm. To your knowledge, are you the first to think of applying these scans in this way?
People are very curious about these scans. Some scientists have some doubts about them, whether or not they actually mean something. It needs to be further explored. So people are exploring it in different ways for different diseases and disorders, but I wanted to kind of explore it in autism.
So I'm curious about the data set. I guess that's what you would call. So you have scans, you don't know yourself who they belong to,
yeah.
I guess, because that would be private information.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you are working as a researcher, the organization probably can help you with your correlations, I guess, to help you know whether your model is
yeah.
right or not. You need to know how you did, so to speak. Roughly how many different scans did it take to get a big enough N to let you do a model, you know, enough samples?
Yeah, I think it was like around 200. There was only one data set. It's called the Autism Brain Imaging Database Exchange.
Okay, so these
yeah.
are people that probably have volunteered to be
yeah.
part of this.
Yeah.
So you can probably take this data set, get access to it almost like a library book
right,
to
right.
work with it. Very interesting. Did you actually look at the images?
Oh, yeah. They were really cool.
Wow. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around what you look for and how you even begin to draw conclusions. Can you walk us through how you did it?
Yeah, so there are other people who obviously researched it. So they use certain benchmarks, and then I made sure that I was able to use the same benchmarks. There are some pretty standard tests, like there's like a p-value, which should be under like 0.05, things like that. So those are basic metrics to make sure the model is working.
Just amazing. Did you do anything? So once you got this model, you tested it, you saw with about 80%+ accuracy, I think you said 88,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It could predict the characteristics of autism, I guess,
mm-hmm.
And therefore ideas about effective treatment. Are there other things? I want to talk just a little bit more about what you've accomplished and then move on to next steps. But what else? Are there other things you've done as part of this that we should mention?
I did get interviewed by Autism Connection, which is a nonprofit here in Pennsylvania. And I'm also interning. After I did this research, I reached out to our community and a couple of nonprofits. I noticed that one of the listeners mentioned Moondogs. Moondog is actually, the founder of Moondogs is also a founder of another nonprofit named Band Together Pittsburgh.
So yes, yes.
I interned there as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you brought that up. So if you're just joining us, by the way, this is Ayana Singh, who is 15 and is about to enter 10th grade. At North Allegheny High School, or North Allegheny Intermediate High School. You know, I learned that very clearly when I showed up at the wrong place once to give a little talk out there. This is miraculous. The
Thank
folks
you.
You're working with must be just blown away by the work you're doing. What would you like to do next? Because it just sounds like there's so much further. I mean, you've gotten very far, but there's so many more places you can go.
Yeah, so I'm working on a couple of things. One of the things is I'm writing a research paper for this to be peer-reviewed by researchers such as researchers at Pitt. And then I'm also working on a nonprofit called Equal Speaks, which I hoped its mission would be to uplift neurodivergent voices by offering public speaking workshops, interviews with speech-language pathologists, and I'm also working on an app as my next project, part of it.
And that's Equal Speaks, and
yep.
You'll find Equal Speaks at Instagram, at Equal Speaks, and I'm glad you're working on a nonprofit. It seems these days neurodivergence is discussed more often, is thought about more often when it comes to jobs and interactions. I'm not sure that presence of neurodivergence is necessarily greater than it used to be, but some say that. I think my sense is folks are just recognizing and responding to it more. Do you have an opinion about that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. For centuries, people have shunned people with neurodivergence or like forced them to act a certain way, you know, force them to behave how society should behave and not acknowledge that they have something. So it's great that we're finally catching up. We're finally researching about it.
Do you have peers who have talked to you about their own characteristics and have found the work you're doing to, I would imagine, it would fill you with great hope?
Yeah, I would definitely want to talk with more of my peers at school, but interning at two nonprofits, Band Together Pittsburgh and Autism Pittsburgh as well, which is another one, has also led me to talk to a lot of adults on the spectrum who are artists and looking like musicians too, and are looking to, you know, make an impact in the world and make a world a better place.
I wonder too, and your work is science based, but there's so much, can be so much stigma associated with autism, and I hope that your work tries to help or succeeds in helping people understand autism mm-hmm. better. Potentially, it would show people there are other people who yeah. are like me and who think that way. And if you extrapolate the work you're doing, if it keeps getting tighter and tighter in terms of the identification, it seems like the potential, I hate to use the word treatment, the strategies mm-hmm. to help people with autism are going to get better
yeah.
and better. What exciting work
Thank you.
that you're doing. So fast forwarding, I can't imagine what's next for you. Have you thought about what you might want to do after graduating?
I hope to major in neuroscience and work on that. And I'm also working on an app, as I told you before, which also helps nonverbal people. I'm planning on, it's called AAC app, but I want to incorporate AI into it. AAC is Augmentative and Alternative Communication, which basically are tools to help people talk. So I want AI to use that and learn from a user's frequently used words, responses, adapt to that, and kind of predict what they want to say, even if they can't say it themselves.
And this would be not for people who are physically unable to speak or neurologically unable to speak, but for those who, for whatever reason, might not engage with other people within what are considered the norms of conversation.
Right.
Fascinating. So the app, for a person who might shut down when they're in a group of people are at work and they're trying to come up with a solution for a particular issue, and somebody in the group tends to shut down when they're in a setting like that, but if they're working alone is superb at solving those kinds of problems, this app would help that person participate authentically during the meeting?
Yeah, there are 25 to 30% of people on the spectrum are nonverbal, just like my younger cousin, and they're trying to teach them how to learn through these tools. So it's a little bit more on like, if they can't speak for whatever reason, we don't know entirely, right, with people on the spectrum, then it's basically a speech generating device where you could say like, what do you want to eat? I want to eat pizza and stuff. And then further, it could be developed where it could be used in the workplace, that if they have some ideas which they can't communicate, then they could like brainstorm here and then figure it out and then select a response and say it.
Wow. I'm amazed at the ideas you're coming up with, and I'm sure everybody around you is
too.
Did you have other inspiration besides your six-year-old cousin?
I actually have been working on teaching piano to a couple of kids around me who are on the spectrum. I did teach a girl last summer, too, so that's also really nice for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. What about in terms of science and creativity and just wrapping your head around these problems? That does not come naturally to mm-hmm. everybody. It seems to have come really naturally to you, and passionately too.
Yeah.
How did you learn to look at the world differently yourself?
I think definitely my family have always been supporting me, and seeing my younger cousin and wanting, like, seeing a thing which affects us so close to you, then that really motivated me to just research a little bit, step out of my comfort zone a little bit, and just get into it and see what happens.
It's remarkable. I hope you'll never stop.
Thank you.
And unless you're ready to, but I mean, I just think you have so much that you've already accomplished. Ayana Singh is who we've been speaking with. She's 15 and will enter 10th grade this coming school year. You can look for her on Instagram at Equal Speaks. It's a nonprofit, or will become a nonprofit soon. And we've put links to the article that she mentioned from Autism of Pennsylvania and some additional links at our website. Is there anything else you would like to add?
That sounds great. Yeah. I have nothing to add.
Thank you. I am really grateful. You've got to be a pretty busy person. So thank you for being able to take time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure.
What an amazing person, Ayana Singh. And again, at Equal Speaks is where you will find her on Instagram. Coming up in just a moment, a somewhat related issue. We have some high school students that are going to be talking about their experiences in the University of Pittsburgh Gene Team Summer Program, the Gene Team. That in just a few moments here at the Saturday Light Brigade. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, Todd Chorosky, Ella Storm, and Chad Green. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings. The Gene Team is coming up next.
Haven't you heard what happened? Give you my word. It happened like a thunderbolt. It came from out of nowhere. I only know it's heaven. How did I throw that seven? There's only one thing wrong. Maybe it won't last long. I've got my fingers crossed. Not that I'm superstitious, I'm afraid it's too good to be true. I've got my fingers crossed. No wonder I'm suspicious, I'm so guilty.
are much too blue. And I don't want no trouble with old man trouble. And that goes double on account of because I'm in love. I've got my fingers crossed. This thrill is so delicious. I'm afraid it's too good to be true.
Eisenhower at the Saturday Light Brigade with I've Got My Fingers Crossed. Ricky and I were watching some videos of Fats Waller, and I forget who the woman singing the song was, but she did a version of that song with Fats Waller playing piano, and it was terrific, and it made me want to get Ari's recording out. Get ready for the Gene team. They're here, and they're ready, but I'm not. We're going to get myself ready in a few moments, and they'll be with you shortly.
The Northside Chronicle joins you in supporting the Saturday Light Brigade. The Northside Chronicle is a nonprofit community newspaper available in print, digital, and mobile formats that provides coverage of the people, places, and events in the 18 Northside neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. Details on the Northside Chronicle, including its free weekly newsletter, are available at thenorthsidechronicle.com.
Are fortunate to have the University of Pittsburgh among many great universities in our area, and one of its programs is called the Gene Team, and its purpose is to provide an inclusive atmosphere where students get to access cutting-edge biological research and also get some college prep mentoring. And the idea is to make sure that all students who want such access can have it. And we've got five students with us today that are part of the Gene team. I cannot wait to learn more about them and about the work they're doing. I'm going to start by just asking you if you could all please introduce yourself, let us know the grade you're going into, and if there's anybody you would like to acknowledge or give a shout out to, it's up to you. But if there is somebody, this is the perfect time to do it. And we'll just go from right to left, right around the room, starting with you.
Hi, I'm Trista. I start my senior year this fall. And I want to give a shout out to my dad. He's an actor, and his actor name is Boykin Anthony.
Tell me his name again.
Boykin Anthony.
I think I've seen him. And you're going into Pittsburgh Obama?
Yes.
My name is Sedona. I'm going into my sophomore year in the fall, and I'd like to give a shout out to my mom because she was the one who told me about the program, so I wouldn't have applied if it wasn't for her.
I'm Sophie. I'm going into my junior year, and I'd like to give a shout out to my parents and my aunt Mindy for always believing in me.
I'm Jacob. I'm going into my senior year. I want to shout out our lovely program directors, Becky and Jess, for all the work they do for us.
I'm Aiden. I'd like to shout out my parents for always supporting me and my biology teacher for letting me know that this program exists.
Excellent. And Aiden, you're at SciTech, Pittsburgh
Yes.
Public Schools. And
I'm going into my sophomore year.
And your sophomore year. And Jacob, you're at Pittsburgh Kappa. So I guess, have the five of you all been working together as part of this program? So you're working on the same, are you working on the same projects or doing, I guess, who can tell me a little bit about how the program's structured and what you've been up to so far?
So there's 15 of us in the program in total, and of the 15 of us, we've been split into five separate groups, and within each group, there's three people. So all 15 of us are working on the same, like, big picture project, but in our groups, we've been split down and we're doing a little bit more specific work. So, like, maybe, like, a specific part of an experiment, or, like, all of us are doing a different part of our final presentation. So it's like we're all working to the same big goal, but, like, we're doing, like, tiny little chunks of it.
Is anybody working with Sedona that's here today?
I'm working with Sedona.
Can you two talk a little bit about the specific project that you're working on?
So our project is to study how the immune system of a sponge works in order to better understand how the immune system has evolved over time and how animals recognize friend from foe.
Interesting. So the sponge, is that considered sort of a lower form of evolution, I guess? So you'd be comparing what it offers in terms of its systems to what might be offered in higher level animals?
Kinda. I mean, we're not really comparing. We're just studying the sponge immune system.
And by the way, you all need to know that while I have a great science and engineering background, the kinds of areas you are studying were the kind that I found the hardest to grasp and understanding anything related and understand things related to biology, we're in biomedical type areas, were always really hard for me. Do you want to add anything, Sedona, about the work you're doing? Immune systems and their evolution by studying the sponge. Other aspects of that?
Yeah, so we're looking specifically at the sponge because when you're looking at how immunity has evolved over time, sponges are kind of the best of both worlds. They're less complicated than some organisms, and they're more complicated than others. And they're also animals, which some people don't know. So they're a really good basis picture to look for when we're studying the picture of immunity, I would say.
Very cool. Do the people who are not part of that project, do you have any questions that you might like to ask Aiden and Sedona about the work they're doing?
Well, we all do like the same experiment, all the sponges, but sometimes we'll get like a different type of sponge to compare between like our lab groups to see if the different types of sponge has different outcomes. So it's not as though we're doing different experiments at each group. We're doing the same experiment, but just with different alterations to it.
I see. So you'll find out if there might be variability between the different sponges. Anything you two might like to add?
Yeah, it's just that we all do the same experiments. We have the same goal. Sometimes just different variables are given to us so we can see how things would vary between, say, species or even species of bacteria.
That's good. And I would imagine that's how a research group works typically. As a team, you are doing these experiments so you can corroborate each other's results or show variability across them. Jacob?
Yeah, just to add to that, it's really helpful to have like 14 other people, even though you're just in a three-person group, that you can like count on if you need help or if you don't understand something. And it should have, as you said, like variability in the results we get. I'll also add that like the groups like work a lot like between each other. Like some there we have like usually two groups at a table. So sometimes two groups will be doing the same thing while another table is doing something else.
Now, has the sponge work you've done so far had any immediate results or anything that you've been able to conclude? It seems to me that would be a long process.
It's a fairly long process. I mean, it involves like feeding sponges like bacteria because they eat bacteria sponges. So it's a lot of waiting before you get some results. But the results we have gotten so far is that that there's like in a higher concentration of bacteria or LPSs, which are like bacterial markers, like they're pieces of a bacteria, and in the higher concentrations, the sponge does not fare well, especially when you just let it sit.
So they feed on bacteria, but if too much bacteria is in their environment, it's not good.
Yeah.
Interesting. Have you had to deliberately overfeed or allow a sponge? I see some nodding heads. That's got to be a little hard to do, but that's in the name of science, I guess. How do you do that, and what do you try to observe when you do it?
To feed them, we basically just submerge them in the bacteria, like in a dish. And since they feed on bacteria, it's basically just to see like which bacteria they classify as food or they trigger their like immune system response to the bad bacteria. So how we set it up is what we'll do. We'll take the bacteria in two different dishes and leave one on there to see like over time that overfeeding them the bacteria, and then the other dish will feed them it but remove the bacteria after to see the difference between it being overfed and then just fed and taken out.
So it's condition and response. You expose these sponges to different conditions and take notes. How long does it take to be able to know how the sponge responded?
So for our experiment, we only waited a day for, we had two dishes which had sponges in them, and we put our bacteria that we were using, or bacterial response things, we put them in to the sponge dishes, and for one, we only left it in for an hour, and the other one, we left it in for a little bit more than 24 hours, and we were able to see results for each one of those different time points. And from those results, we were able to draw like a major conclusion that sponges aren't able to handle large concentrations of bacteria for a longer period of time.
I'm curious, have any of you done anything like this before?
No, I have not done anything like this before.
And when it was explained to you what this experiment was and what it was going to yield, did any of you have any doubts? I would have doubts. I'd be saying, yeah, right. I'm curious.
Well, the first time we were introduced to the project was our interview several months before the project. So we actually didn't know what we were going to do, but we were asked a question, I believe it was, to find this. And like whenever we got into the program, we learned like a lot of us like answered similar to what we did, and that we would have like a lot of like variability when like we tested multiple species of sponges and affected them with multiple bacteria. So we had like some, we had some idea of what was going on.
Yeah, I guess you knew what you were, excuse me, what you were getting into to be sure. You looked like you were going to add something.
Yeah, the question on the Zoom call, it had to do with, like, how would you, it was basically, like, foreshadowing what we were going to do, but I didn't know at the time. I also didn't know that sponges were animal cells. So, like, answering the question, I kind of just answered it, like, broadly, because the question was like, how would you test sponges in different environments? So I just answered it broadly, not knowing that that was really what we were going to be doing.
Now, the program is still going on, right? You've still got some time left. Are there other things that you've already done that you would like to talk about? If not, I'm curious what's next.
Well, I'd like to just say that, like, what we've been doing has been really cool for me. And, you know, it feels good to just get out and do this. But, I mean, some results I'd like to talk about were, like, we did an experiment. Our first experiment was on how sponges feed on a specific type of bacteria called E. coli. And what we did for that is we, first we... let the gemmules, which are like sponge, like eggs, kind of hatch, and then we fed them, like we fed them E. coli into their dish, and then we waited, and then we went to a we used a high tech microscope to look at their different, like, to look at how they fed on the bacteria.
And what did you see?
Well, we saw that
And this is so new, you're probably still documenting your findings. Anybody want to jump in?
Yeah, so the way we were able to actually visualize the sponge feeding process is we used these certain type of dyes or stains. One was called phalloidin, and we used this to stain the cytoskeleton, which is kind of like what holds the sponge cells together. We used this phalloidin to dye the cytoskeleton green. We used this thing called a DAPI, which dyed the DNA of the sponge cells blue. And then the specific E. coli that we used is called M. cherry E. coli, which means that it is supposed to glow red under fluorescent light. So when looking under the high-tech microscope, we were able to see all these colors, the red, the green, and the blue. And by looking at these colors, we were able to, like, draw conclusions based on where the red, which was the bacteria, was in the sponge, and, like, kind of how that, like, moved around the sponge.
So it's like Aiden got us started. Being able to use this particular E. coli, you can get a better sense of the structure when you add the dyes that you just mentioned, Sedona, and I think that Jacob was going to add something too.
Yeah, as Sedona started saying, like, the ultimate result of that is you had, like, a really vibrant image with, like, red and green and blue, and you could very specifically see, for the experiment, we had three, basically, to set it up, before you put it in the microscope, you had to basically add a chemical to it, which almost, like, froze it in time. So we had multiple markers where we would let the sponge feed for 30 minutes, one for like an hour and one for a day. and you could see that, like, comparing 30 minutes to a day, you could see the bacteria, like, spread to, like, the whole sponge. Specifically, E. coli is, like, something you could see, like, a sponge eating in the wild. So it wasn't, like, actually harmful, but it was really interesting to see, like, that, like, bacteria. After just, like, one day, it was, like, everywhere, basically.
Let me ask, Trista, anything you would like to add to the work that's been done or what might happen next?
We've done a lot of things. One of the most recent things we've done that we actually haven't got any results back for, we were able to, like, basically test the bacteria in the sponges and to see, like, what actually was the specific bacteria, like the names that are in the sponges. So we were able to test that. But in order to do that, we had to send it off to another lab, and we're still waiting for those results back. But that was, like, my favorite thing that we've done. Like, we've done a lot of cool things. And this opportunity, like, I'm just glad for it, because when I get older, I want to be in the lab. So this just really let me see what it was like in the lab.
What made this something that is one of your favorite things that you did?
Well, the whole process of it, before we send it off to the lab, is a really long process. But basically, we have to take the sponge bacteria and process it. And then we have to, like, make this gel that you put the bacteria into, and then it shows up inside the gel. Like, that's how you see if there's bacteria inside the gel. And making the gel, it's just super fun. Like, I like processes that are really, like, specific and like,
so there's a lot of consistency and really a recipe for how you do that to
yes.
get it exactly right. I wanted to ask Sophie, too, any reflections on what you've done so far, what you've liked, how it's maybe inspired you?
I just like all the hands-on that we do, and, like, pretty much everything we've done here is completely new. So, like, I just think it's so unique that I've learned, like, a whole new skill set of lab techniques in the 3 weeks that I've been here. There's just so much that I, like, never could have imagined I would be doing, especially during my summer. I just think it's a very unique opportunity.
What are some of those techniques?
There's a lot of, like, extremely, like, high-tech and, like, complex machines that we use, such as PCR, which stands for polymerase chain reaction. It's a machine that we can use to process DNA. There's even just, like, micropipetting that we use, that just, like, you can pipette such small amounts.
Wow.
Just so many things that I had no clue was even done.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. We have a good amount of time left. Trista was talking about how this is supporting what she would like to do when she gets older. I have two questions. Before we get a little more personal, how might this research be extended to other animals or even to humans? Have you talked much about that as part of the work you're doing?
So just yesterday, all five groups were able to showcase their results for our experiment where we were treating sponges with different concentrations of bacteria to see how their immune system would respond to that. And from that, we kind of, like, drew the conclusion that the way sponges respond to, like, an overwhelming amount of bacteria is they'll just kind of, like, get rid of any cells that have been infected, or, like, just kind of, like get rid of, like, certain sections of them and, like, kind of, like, disconnect it from themselves, almost like if it's exploding itself up. And in some cases, like, even in humans, due to, like, certain bacteria, like, it causes the human immune system to be harmful to the human. And, like, so that's, like, a connection that you can make from sponges to humans, which would be helpful to, like, continue research on in the future.
I'd like to add on to what Sedona said. And I'd like to say that the reason why we can extend, the reason why we know, like, and can extend this is because in sponges, they use a lot of similar communicators, which are like cell communication devices. So in our tests, when a sponge was exposed to high concentrations of bacterial parts, what seemed to happen in extension of that is that the immune system of the sponge, it went completely haywire because there's just so many signals all going on at once. And so the sponge reacted way more than it actually needed to. It thought it was in a huge amount of danger when it was actually in none, because it wasn't even a live bacteria. So the sponge really took a lot of damage, and it really helps us show how immune systems can do damage to a host. Like in a lot of human diseases, what ends up killing a human is our own immune system goes completely haywire and causes a ton of tissue death.
Yet the immune system is actually attacking your body rather than defending it. It's fascinating. Anybody else want to add about some of the ways that the research you're doing and other research being done in research groups like the Gene Team will have applications?
Well, so we're just one part of like a whole bigger project. Scott, I forget which state he's in. He's not here, but yeah, shout out to Scott. So he's like kind of, there's so many people involved in it. Like, he studies other types of sponges, and he basically sent them down to us to study and verify, like, the processes and all the protocols and experiments that we do on the sponges. And it's just a part of a whole bigger project to just study them and figure out immune systems to add on to our knowledge of immunity evolution.
It's amazing to be part of something that big and to know that the work you're doing truly matters. It's so important. We were talking about how this might inspire you to do something when you're older. Why don't we start with Aiden and work our way around. Aiden, if you, now you're 15, going into 10th grade?
Yeah, correct.
At SciTech. So you've got some time left, but you all have a lot of time, but have you thought about what you might like to do, or is this inspiring you to go in a certain direction?
Well, since I've been young, I've always been really interested in the immune system and pathogens, which are like bad, like viruses and bacteria. And this work here has really like solidified my love for that. I mean, it's awesome to be able to see up close like how a sponge reacts to bacteria. And I mean, the work we're doing is just so cool. And I mean, it's definitely been one of my interests for a long time to go into like the biology field of studies. So, I mean, it's just so awesome. It's hard to put into words.
Understood. Thank you. Let's go and talk to Jacob, who is about to be a senior at Pittsburgh Kappa.
I've definitely been interested in the STEM field for the future. Going into Gene Team, biology wasn't my strong suit, definitely, but I've learned so much, and it's really turned me on to like how cool like biology is and how much work is being done there and like what opportunities there are in it.
I wish I'd had an opportunity like this. As I mentioned, I did not understand biology very well at all. It just did not compute in my head. What's your major at Kappa?
Kappa, I'm an instrumentalist who plays trumpet.
So you can do both, right, depending on what your interest ultimately be. Kappa, it's the Creative and Performing Arts High School at Pittsburgh Public Schools, but their traditional academic programs there are really full of rigor and discipline. A lot of people don't realize that. It's more than music and art. Let's turn around to Sophie now. What are you thinking about?
I just thought this was a really good opportunity, being interested in math and science. for my future, I'm thinking about dermatology. I do cosmetology as a program through my high school, so I just really love the like hair, skin, and nails, and I think that that's something that I could build off of that.
That's fascinating, and it could be understanding various products or even mm-hmm. developing products of your own. And let me remind you, Sophie is 16 and is about to be a junior yeah. at Keystone Oaks. Sedona is 15 at Trinity Christian School and is about to go into 10th grade.
Yeah, so for the longest time, since I can remember, since I was a kid, I've always wanted to be a doctor. I haven't, like, really decided what kind of doctor yet, but, like, I'm leading towards, like, pediatrician. So I've always been really interested in biology and being able to learn all the science I can. And so I wanted to get more into depth in that. And so my